think it'd be easier if we will read to get a running feel for it. I know it's complicated in terms of the language. I'm not going to translate every word. But it says like, "Ve'et ha'chadasha b'shor ha'shor shah p'ksha kol ha'muhuma elilit et chelek nechshalei amenu ad shematza makom ayidei Spinoza." So basically said that in this new era, at the root of the root, there was a meeting of the confusion that comes from Avodah Zorah with parts of our nation that are primitive, and it emerged in Spinoza. Meaning, he's not identifying Spinoza as the reason for this, but he is the culmination of something that's happening in the nation, and it emerges through him. And not that he's not responsible, but it's not like this one man can start something like this on his own. Because the impact of Spinoza's teachings, Rav Kook is saying, leads to secularism and ultimately anti-Semitism and culminates in a Holocaust. So he's not saying that it's all this one man's fault, but there's something about the climate, something about what's going on in the community, which is creating an opportunity for this to emerge through this guy. And this is what we get. So he says, "Shenitgalgel biyuchud b'smiut ha'ayim v'itnakrut l'teva yudit shebekerbo." And all this came because he was blind to, and he was also alienated to, the real Judaism inside of him. If he was really in touch with himself as a Jew, he would not have said these things. If he was really seeing clearly, he wouldn't have said these things. L'kol ha'bachot l'fi avanat rov ha'olam bo shehi toldam muchrechet b'signono. And so he's even being, we mentioned that he's being very dan l'kaf zchut, that based on the way most people understood him, which he still says was his fault because his way of writing was of such that this is how people understood it. But if Cook's kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt, maybe he didn't quite mean exactly what everybody's interpreting to say. Number two. Letzeit michutz memakor ha'chaim shel idealim Elohim. Because what did basically Spinoza do? The whole article is based on, is your religion about an Elzar, a strange god? Or is your religion about living the ideals of Hashem? Right? And that's the point. Avodah Zorah became fixated on the persona of their gods, right? And we are saying God as He is objectively, we can't know Him. We can only know Hashem as He relates to us and as He appears to us subjectively. And how does Hashem relate to us and appear to us subjectively? As loving, as caring, as kind, as compassionate. And therefore, to serve Hashem means to be loving, kind, compassionate, because that's who Hashem is for us. Okay? Once you take idealism out, and you become fixated on placating, bargaining, and flattering your God, bad news. You've got an ale czar. And so that's what Spinoza did. Lachzor l'nikutat ha'ktanut v'yaldut, v'hu davke l'mash mufla u'muchasa la'atzmut Elohim. So basically, Spinoza went back to what Avodah Zorah did and said, this is God. We're going to define God. There he is. And now we have created this great distance. There's me, there's God. And he doesn't have the nuance of the whole concept of Kantian subjectivity, where God, as he so perceived by us, lives inside of us. And Hashem, objectively, is beyond our parameters, and so we don't know Hashem objectively. We only know him subjectively. What do we know about him is his ways. And therefore, we don't feel far, we feel close, we feel connected. But Spinoza has this chutzpah to say, I will define God, and God is nature. Bim bat atoldot lasot, number three, ve'im ze bal atoldot lasot et ha'muvkash Elohi l'min miksoa shel mechkar miuchad. So that's where we kind of ended. Whereby, what he essentially did is he's the father of theology. Because theology is the study of God. And the study of God is like any study to define nature, study of science. To define God, the study of theology. Right? But Yiddishkeit is not theology. We're not trying to study theology. We're not trying to study God. We're trying to study the ways of God. So Judaism is Musariut. So we go on. So he says, Sha'adam osek bo me'at v'holech imo keri v'arai v'hofech mimenu panav. Because what basically happens if you study something, got it, I understand it, let's go down with the next subject. Okay? But when it talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you will never get it. Why will you never get who he is? Pardon? So what? So what? So just accept and forget about him. If I'm never going to understand him, so let's do something that interests me that I can't understand. So why can't I understand him? I'm told I can't understand him, but why can't I understand him? It's for the same reason I can't understand you, and it's for the same reason I can't understand the table either. Why? Yeah.
Because you only have like your unique viewpoint of something. You can never like have an all-encompassing viewpoint.
Okay, that's for sure part of it. But the other part of it is I never know it as it is. I only know it as it relates to me. Right? So you've added relates to me and ours relates to you and relates to him, right? But even if we all had the same viewpoint, it's a viewpoint. It's how Hashem appears to us, relative to us, as we understand it within our subjective mind. So we will never understand the objective reality. We only understand the objective reality as it's subject to our subjective perceptions. And therefore, we will never know God, but we never know the table either. We never know you either. You'll never even know yourself either. Right? You cannot know yourself objectively. It's always subjective. So that means that there will always be an objective truth that you can forever yearn to know a little more subjectively and a little more subjectively. But it will always be outside the grasp of your subjective grasp, which is the only grasp that you have, and therefore that will ensure a progressive evolving. So that's what we said yesterday, the pasuk Yismach Labriut, Yismach Lev Mevakshei Hashem, happy is the heart that seeks Hashem, but miserable is the heart that would find Hashem. That would be the contrary. Because we love the seeking. We love the journey. We don't ever want to know it as it is, because if we did, we'd be finished. The story would be over. The adventure would be over. Okay? So that's what he says over here. That if we turn it into theology and we've defined God, then our journey is finished, and we'll go do something else. So now we're up to four. U'kesh'anishiyut ovedet et darchei ha'nitzchi, and when mankind loses the eternal way, right? What is the eternal way? Read on. Az hu ovedet u'muchanet le'shkia ve'olma ideali nechshach ba'adam. When a person turns from the eternal way, what are we left with? We are lost. We are ready for all kinds of mistakes. What has disappeared from us is idealism. Because essentially, what does it mean to know God? It's what? To know God means what? Not to know him as he is, but to know his ways. And what is his ways? Ideals. And so that's what we study. We study ideals. And we study ways to live those ideals. And a person that lives godly ideals is a person that knows God in terms of what it would mean and what you're capable of knowing. All right? So when your religion revolves around ideals, so then does the journey ever end? No. When your religion revolves around defining God, does your journey ever end? Yes, because you think you got it. And so that's it. We've defined God. Now let's go do something else. So number five. Ashichicha shel idealim Elohim muchrachet hi lagbir sinah l'Yisrael. As soon as the whole concern for idealism is lost, necessarily there will be an increase in hatred for the Jews. דוגמה הסינה של רומי אלילית ליהודה מפני הניגוד הגדול שעצמות הצביון של החיים כולם שביניהם. An example of that is the hatred that the Romans, the idolatrous Romans had against the Jews, because the Jews were the absolute antithesis of their lifestyle. They didn't want Musariyut. They didn't want ethics. They wanted the Colosseum. They wanted to enjoy the sport of watching people kill each other. Right? The antithesis of Judaism. And they paid for the Colosseum with the treasures of the Beis HaMikdash. That was their Beis HaMikdash. And they hated our Beis HaMikdash. Because our Beis HaMikdash was about coming close to a God that you can never know, but can be inspired to be more ideal. Idealistic. Alright, so what happens when the world forgets about idealism is they end up hating the Jews. And we read that piece from Hitler, that Hitler says that you know that the Jews are really the inventors of ethics. But really, we are barbarians. And we cannot transcend nature. There's just nature. Who said there's just nature? Spinoza. God is nature. Nature is God. So you can't transcend nature, says Hitler. So what Hitler says is basically symptomatic of the teachings of Spinoza. So even though Spinoza had no intention of doing that, but once you start saying that God is nature, nature is God, you have literally set the world up for evil. Because we cannot transcend nature. So we have to just be natural. And when we examine the natural world, and we want to emulate the ways of the natural world, then the natural world is not so kind. Yeah.
On the flip side, as Jews, how do we make sure we don't lose God, so to speak, and just are worshiping a set of values?
Ah, so that's davening. Beautiful. I'm glad you asked that question. Because when you learn Torah, you're learning the ways of Hashem. When you're davening, you're talking to Etzem. You're not talking to your subjective perception. Like, your subjective perception of me is a teacher. But you're not talking to Rabbi David Aaron. You're trying to connect with David Aaron, right? But you can't perceive David Aaron. But you yearn to connect to David Aaron, right? And you know that when you talk to David Aaron, behind David Aaron, at the root of Rabbi Aaron, there is no Rabbi Aaron without David Aaron. So there are no ideals without reaching out to God, right? And that's what Rav Kook says in another place. He says that humanism is not going to succeed, right? Ethics that are based on human beings that are coming up with ways so that we'll be able to function and not kill each other won't last, won't make it. Unless your ideals are rooted in and being fed by Hashem, Atzmut. So somebody brought this up yesterday. In other words, we want to yearn for Atzmut, but we want to remind ourselves that we're only going to end up with the ways of God. You follow?
Yeah.
So you talk to Hashem. You don't talk to the Midah of Chesed. You don't talk to the Midah of Gvura. Right? You talk to Hashem. Right? Atzmus. But you realize that you won't understand Atzmus. You yearn for Atzmus. But you don't understand Atzmus. But when you yearn Atzmus and you seek to bring Atzmus into your life, you know that you're connecting to Hashem when it arouses out of you the yearning to be more idealistic, more kind, more compassionate, more value-based. And that's Torah and Tefillah. Tefillah is yearning for Atzmus. Torah is reminding yourself that what we're going to study is not Hashem, but His ways. We don't study Hashem. Right? My classes on God are not about God. They're about how God appears to us, and that will only be important if it helps us be better people. Right? But if these ideas are just ideas, sky in the, you know, pie in the sky, then it doesn't matter. Right? Doesn't matter. Right? It's even bad. Okay? So, we're now up to 6. Yad Hashem hayta al roshei ha'edah ashter damit, az lo tzi mi'aklal et mi shechashav lashkiach et idiyuliyut shel hakriya b'shem Hashem. And so, Hashem, through his hashkacha, move the Amsterdam community to put a cherem on Spinoza because he was causing us to forget the idealism that comes from calling the name of God. Right? What does it mean to call the name of God? Why not call to God?
Right? It's a perception.
Right, because it's a name is a perception, it's a relationship. Names are a relationship. Without the name, there is no relationship. So it says, Al yedeh kriya mehamemet latzmiut. Through the call, this paralyzing call for atzmiut. What does that mean, that he had a paralyzing call for atzmiut? Yeah.
He thought that when he was touching what we say is the perception, he said, oh, this is it itself.
That's right. Forget about perception. He has no concept of perception, not perception. He's saying, let's know God. And I'm going to define him. I'm going to give the definitive definition of God. Here it is. Nature. Oh, those foolish idolaters. They thought it was the sun. Ha. They thought it was the moon. Yeah. They thought it was the sea. Crazy. It's actually the sum total of all of nature. Got it. Done. All right. So essentially, he's an atheist. He talked about God a lot. He said, God is nature. Nature is God. But he was basically an atheist because there is no God if it's just nature. So we go now to 7. She'enima lo az v'lo anava, lo kedusha v'lo simcha, lo tara v'lo chayim shel chifetz l'pulat emet. When a person seeks to define God, what will they end up with? Right? There won't be lo az, there won't be this daringness to do good. Right? There won't be anava, there won't be humility. There won't be kedusha. Why will there not be these things? If I believe that God is nature and nature is God, why will that basically eliminate any sense of kedusha, any sense of anava? Why? Yeah, yes.
Because there's no relativity between the holiness in anything. Like the least holy thing is just as holy as the holiest thing. So there's no, like, whatever action you do is the same.
Good. 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 Yeah. That's right. There's no aspirations whatsoever. Right? That's the interesting thing of the difference between Judaism and Eastern tradition. In Eastern tradition, what is nirvana? But what is nirvana? You're giving me the implications of nirvana. What does it mean to be in a state of nirvana? Is in a state of non-striving. Judaism is the opposite of nirvana. We want to always be striving for more love, for more peace, tikkun olam, more authenticity, more integrity, more compassion, more wisdom. They're saying that's the problem. The problem is that you're yearning. The problem is that you're striving. Just be here now. And what is that? What does it mean to be here now? What would inspire you to be here now? You know who's really good to be here now? Nature. Nature's all be here now. Nature's anxious to get anywhere. Nature has some vision. Nature's striving for anything. Right? In fact, that's what's in a certain way, that's what's so calming about being at the sea. It's being. And so there's something very peaceful about being. Right? But there's something very dangerous about that. Because Yiddishkeit is not about be here now. It's about what? It's become here now. Right? Grow, strive. Tikkun olam. Something's broken. Go find something that's broken. Go fix that brokenness. Right? And so as soon as you say God is nature, nature is God, there's no anava. First of all, anava is a sense of who am I in the face of God. What am I? I'm nature. It's nature. It's all nature. There is no sense of relationship. There's no sense of relativity. And why is there no simcha? Why is there no simcha?
Because it's very distant.
So why is that defined as lack of simcha?
Because simcha's got purpose.
Right. Simcha you feel when you're growing. That's when we feel happy, when we're growing. But in the world of nature, there's nowhere to grow to because there's no purpose, because there's no beyond nature that nature is serving and moving towards, because God is nature. If God is not transcending nature, then we've got nowhere to go beyond nature. So that's a devastating and incredibly depressing way of living your life. Right? There's really nothing beyond it all, so it gives no meaning. So as we said, Yismach Lev Mevakshei Hashem, happy is the heart that seeks God but not finds God. Because happiness is in the seeking, not in the finding. Happiness is in knowing that I can grow and I can continue to grow and I reveal, but I have more to reveal. So he says, Lo tahara v'lo t'chayim shel chefetz l'pulat emet. There's no refinement. There's no life with a desire to do emes. So he basically robbed life of life. You know? In other words, maybe I mentioned this yesterday, I don't remember. But I don't think we have the luxury to decide whether we believe in God or not. It's too late. If you seek meaning, if you seek purpose, if you want to be happy and you know that happiness is growth, then you need God. Right? You know, you might say there is no God, but your behavior and your the very makeup of your psyche is dependent on God. So you can maybe say, you know, theoretically, I don't believe in God. But your whole life is based on God. Right? Right? Your whole life is based on God. The desire for life, the desire for a sense of preciousness of life, of insignificance of life, your whole desire for meaning, for growth, for purpose. Without God, without any reality beyond nature, there's nowhere to go, there's nowhere to grow, there's nothing. You're done. So that's why I think it's very funny when people say they don't believe in God. I said to a guy told me he doesn't believe in God. I said, so then there's no difference between you and a piece of dirt. I said this to you, no? You've heard this before from me, no? Right? So then he said, no, what are you talking about? No? But you have to understand, if there's a difference between you and a piece of dirt, then you're saying you believe in God. So we go on. Six. B'kitzat netiyot ha'idealiyot, shehi be'emet rak kriya le'el nechar, el echer, v'hekshar gadol le'besof le'itroknut ha'machshava. Once you cut off the idealism from God by making God into nature, nature is not striving for anything, nature isn't yearning for anything. Nature is a self-contained circuit. So then you end up with a strange God. An elacher. Elacher means doesn't care about you. Right? Acher, he's, you know, you call out to him, he doesn't even know who you are. Right? That's the idea. He's other to you. And you've now prepared the ground for a complete emptying of all philosophical thought. There's nothing to think about. There's nothing to try and figure out anymore. Done, right? And so this is what's created a secular world. When people live for the now, eat, drink, and be merry, for we shall die tomorrow. Isn't that what nature tells you? No. That's what it's about. My wife was at the funeral of her cousin, and as she was seeing her cousin, who was a young woman, being lowered into the ground, my wife was overwhelmed with feelings of tshuva. Life isn't forever. You want to do as much good as you can now. But her other cousin, who was alive, standing next to her, said, that's just the way it is. Here today, gone tomorrow. Get what you can now. That's a secular way of thinking. Get what you can now. Right? It's a Beatles song, you know. How's it go? If you want it, here it is, come and get it. But you better hurry because it's going fast. That's the way a lot of people live their lives. That's a pure secularism. Now, I don't believe that most people are purely secularistic. Because I do believe they believe in love and they want more love. But where is their love in nature? True love in nature. Right? How many animals are committed to their spouses? Right? How many animals even stay connected to their children? And the whole concept of grandchildren, as far as I've been told, there's no concept of grandchildren amongst the animal nations. Amongst the animal nations. Okay. Yeah.
Surely Yiddishkeit also places like a positive emphasis on being present and being in the now and like being in the moment. How do we accomplish that successfully from a Jewish perspective?
So that's why I call it become here now. In other words, I'm striving to be more loving, but I'm not impatient. I'm not jumping over moments. I realize that I have to be here now and live and practice and yearn for love, but not be dreaming out the future and not in the present. Right. So we believe in the now, but we also believe, you know, what's unique about human beings, what makes people happy? It's the ability to have something to look forward to. Right. Now, this is not Eastern. I heard a really interesting conversation between the Dalai Lama and Martin Seligman. You know what Martin Seligman is? He's one of the founders, maybe he's the founder of positive psychology. Right. And it was so interesting because he challenged the Dalai Lama and said that we have found that people, in order to be happy, have to have something to look forward to. Whereby Eastern tradition is saying, no, be here now.
Right.
It's about the now. And when you forget about the now, then you'll be miserable. And so real happiness is being present in the now. Positive psychology is saying, but people can't be happy unless they have hope, unless they have a sense of, you know, they're looking forward to something, right? I think Judaism would say, yeah, you should be in the now with also looking forward. When we say that, you know, ani ma'amin be'emunah shelema be'viat ha-mashiach ve'af al pi, you know, echakeh lo b'chol yom she'yavo. Why just wait? Why get frustrated every day that he didn't come? When he comes, let me know, right? Why do I have to every day yearn for Mashiach, right? When he comes. Because there's meaning in the yearning now, right? And so, yes, we're going to every day yearn for Mashiach and not be disappointed, well, he didn't come today. We'll do it again tomorrow. Every day be disappointed. I'll just forget about it and let me know when he's here. Right? No, because there's something meaningful in the yearning, because the yearning for Mashiach means that today you're going to be kind because you want to bring Mashiach. Today you're going to be honest because you want to bring Mashiach. But it wasn't about people thinking about Mashiach all the time. It was, what do I need to do now in order to bring Mashiach? But I have something to look forward to, and because of that, there's something I need to do now. Right? That's how we live our lives. Okay? As soon as you say that nature is God, God is nature, so Spinoza basically robbed us of any sense of joy in life, any journey in life, any adventure in life. So, look at nine. Shehari ein klal achara yediya brura mivukheret. Shum yidira atzmit ladam lo rak b'chok eluhut ki'im b'chol musag. Because in truth, there's no way. Why is he wrong? Because in truth, there's no way of knowing God as he is. In fact, there's no way of knowing anything as it is. 10. V'kol ha'emet ha'torah tuchal litbases rak al musad ha'idealiyut ha'tivit lahamatbeya ha'elohit shel darchei Hashem. The only true way is to focus on the ideals of Hashem, not Hashem as he is, b'romamut ozam be'avatam ha'yichusit, shetimtza b'uma shleima b'chom milueya v'nitzkoteya, sherak b'shalom ha'nishiyut kula la'shalom. In other words, all we want is idealism, all we want is peace for everyone, and that's what it's about. Nature has nothing to do with peace. In nature, there's not much peace at all. So as soon as nature is God, then your God asks of you of nothing. Your God has no vision of anything beyond. And basically, a true naturalist would not strive and would simply live in the present. Right? And they would not be idealistic. 11. Lule Amir Hakim Alolo Az. If it wouldn't be that the Amsterdam community pushed him away and put him to cherem, hallo, haya ish hazeh nechshav ben chachmei Yisrael, Spinoza would have become one of the Gedolei Ador. But he was from an Orthodox home, right? Svarav hayu nechshavim kesifrei chakira elohit ne'amanim v'ruim ba'alukal. In other words, what he was saying was sounding so much like Judaism. He was saying, ein od bavado, right? He's saying, Hashem isn't in existence. Hashem is existence, right? But we say Hashem is existence and what? And beyond. To remind us that everything we're saying is subjective and there will always be objective reality beyond. And that he didn't say. So that one line, beyond, well, is the difference. And people wouldn't have noticed it. So people would have thought, it's a chassidish rebbe. Right? Yeah, we're saying it also. Right? Shem Elohim is teva. Right? Hateva. Great. Divine immanence. Beautiful. And so Rav Kook is justifying what the Amsterdam community did, even though he's recognizing that it doesn't seem like they actually knew what they were doing. They didn't really understand him. Just something, the spirit of Hashem moved them, and providentially, right, they did it because he was literally an incredible danger to the entire Jewish people. Yeah.
Do you think Spinoza had a different view of Elohim versus Hashem, versus the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei?
Well, again, Rav Kook is saying that the way he's understood by most people, it seems like he only recognizes Elohim and not Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Because Elohim is the God of nature.
Right. So then how do you think he would deal with Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei?
He wouldn't. So he was a pantheist. That's what he was, a pantheist. We are panentheists. But it's too close. Right? Too easy to confuse. So he says that he would have ended up having Sfarim. Ve'en l'shar et koach ha-nefet sh'ayat safun bahem. And you can't even imagine how the explosiveness of what was hidden in his works. You should know the Christian world got upset with him also. So he not only got alienated from the Jewish world, the Christian world also said, this guy's bad stuff. This guy's no good. L'ma'amad ruchani ve'lumi shel Yisrael. This was like really vile to the spiritual status of the Jewish people. But ezu tzura yuma haya yotze kishaya gama aza evri nosif alav. It would have been terrible if it started to be written in Hebrew. And as he said before, he started putting some psukim there. And before you know it, he would have been an admor. He would have been a rebbe. So they really had to get rid of him. But that's because what he's teaching is so close to the truth. Right? But it's not the truth. Like counterfeit. What makes something counterfeit? You walk into a store, right? They hand you, you hand the cashier a $100 bill. She says, sir, this is nothing. So what are you talking about? It's a $100 bill. Sir, I'm sorry, this is counterfeit. What are you talking about? It's a $100 bill. It says right there, $100. So, well, sir, if you look at the, what it was, Lincoln, if I look at Lincoln's left eye, it's just a little bit off. So he's like looking at something. I don't know. don't look at his eye. Look at the number in the corner. Sorry, sir, this is a worthless piece of paper. It just takes a tiny bit, an eye. Off, worthless. But that's how dangerous he was. It was counterfeit. That's why in Kabbalah they say Levan was so evil. What was so evil about Levan? What was his name? Whitey. That's a great name for a mafia leader. Whitey. Right? Because he doesn't look black, dark. Right? He looks white. He looks pure. That is the high super classy evil. When super classy evil is a counterfeit of good. So number 12, he says, Kama yu po'alim lazik. Imayu nechtavim b'lashir ha-kodesh v'ayu mutubalim gam kein b'divrei Torah b'gilud panim shalok alacha. Right, imagine if they would have let this guy go and it would have been translated into Hebrew and he starts putting psukin in there and then he starts coming up with halachic decisions. Yoter v'yoter mimashi palu kol elu b'yoto yoshev herchek mina machana badad v'nivdal. He would have been even more dangerous had they not gotten rid of him. But the fact that they got rid of him did not get rid of the danger. He caused a huge damage in the Jewish world. 13. Emnan koach ha-na'aratz kezeh, this incredible power. Afav shi memekora besiso hu elili. This power, who's the power he's talking about? Spinoza. Spinoza was a very powerful man, right? And even though his source and his basis was idolatrous, because he was seeking to know God as he is, lo ayef shar kimat lofia ki'im al yedei ish mezer Yisrael. Nobody could have come up with this if it wouldn't have been a Jew. Right? He's saying what he did was actually, in a funny way, because he's Jewish. Why? What's so Jewish about him? Yeah.
Well, he's searching for God.
That's right. He yearns for Atzmiut. Rav Kook never said don't yearn for Atzmiut. Just remind yourself that you'll never get there. Right? But you should have both. You yearn for Atzmiut. It's like, yes, I know that the taste of an apple is subjective. Right? But I know that I can't have the taste of the apple unless I bite into an apple. So I yearn for the apple, but I know that I will never taste the apple as it is. I will taste the apple as it appears and relates to me. But I'm not going to forget about apples. Right? And so the incredible yearning that he had for Atzmut was divine, was holy. It was just confused. And where do we see that in Avodah Zorah? We talked about this Gemara.
But also the Rambam brings that up.
Okay.
In Hilchot Avodah Zorah, like his, he gives like a whole origin story for Avodah Zorah. That first, everyone was obviously worshiping Hashem first, and then afterwards, they started saying, "Oh, well, like the sun and the moon." Their powers from Hashem, so we should thank Hashem through those, and then they sort of forgot Hashem in that process, and they started to think, oh, well, these are the powers.
Right, right. But there's also a Gemara that says that what happened when our sages eliminated the Yetzirah for Avodah Zorah? Well, we lost prophecy, but what else?
What does it?
Right. What emerged from the Kodesh Kodeshim was a lion made of fire. Now, what's that Gemara telling us about Avodah Zorah? It comes from a holy place. And what's that holy place? I yearn Atzmut. Right? I yearn Atzmut, but I have to intellectually tell myself, God will be within my reach, but beyond my grasp. So I should talk to Hashem, yearn for Hashem, and realize that that would translate into knowing His ways and wanting to live His ways. Right? So there's something incredibly Jewish about Spinoza, that he craved to know God as He is, but needed the maturity to know that I will never know God as He is, but I won't give up the craving. Because that will fuel a forever progressive subjective journey of uncovering and discovering His ways.
Is this the idea behind why the assertive Dibro begin with Anochi Hashem Elokecha, not Ani? Because it includes like the Chaf HaDimyon, the sense that we can never get that sense of totality?
Interesting. Could be. You'll put that in your sefer, okay? Could be. Okay, so 14. Ad shirak hu haya yechol alid tzel chashuch v'nora kezel yidei ora gadol. How did he, Spinoza, create so much darkness? Because there's so much light. Like, what creates darkness? If there's incredible light and something's blocking it, there's greater darkness, right? But that's because there was incredible light, and that's what's so dangerous about Spinoza. That in the source of it all, there was an incredible Jewish desire. I want Hashem. I want to get close to Hashem. Shekiblu b'derech shvura u'muvefet shegam ba'amol rav v'nisyon kabir. Hineinu mukshareim lotzi gam meharimon hazeh ha'muveh b'klipato eizer toch tamtziti harui litkayem achrei miruko livuno v'sirufo. So Rav Kook is now saying that we can kind of take some holy sparks out of Spinoza. Right? We can do that. And so, that's brought up in this English piece over here. And the second part over here, which we read last time, we didn't continue, he says that still, since he was after all the seed of Israel, his internal side has a fundamental principle that after much melting can enter our camp. Rabbi Mendelssohn began purifying it, but hadn't finished its repair. But the Baal Shem Tov purified Spinoza without knowing who he was purifying, for he did not need its source. In other words, he didn't read Spinoza and say, hey, there's some good stuff here, but he needs refining. He came to it through his own Ruach HaKodesh, for he drew his knowledge from its internal source and purified it. Right? And the process still is not finished, right? And it is being completed, and when it would be complete entirely, it will leave the category of cursed and come to the category of blessed. In other words, Rav Kook is telling us that really there's something incredibly holy on the flip side of how cursed Spinoza was, is that we have to learn from and draw from this incredible thirst for the living God. Sama nafshli el chai. I am thirsty for God. Right? I'm not going to talk about midos and it's just dry, right? Without a yearning to connect to God Himself. I want to connect with God Himself. I know I will never connect with Him as He is, but what I will connect with as He is, but I will never understand Him as He is, right? And I will arouse the yearning to be good, to be kind. And my goal is to live Hashem's ways, right? But my yearning is to touch Hashem or be touched by Hashem, right? And I will know that I've done it if I'm aroused to be idealistic, to be kind, to be compassionate. And so that's basically what he said. Right? A little bit more than 15. Achar shehuscha adeya enoshit besofu systemati bedat darchei Hashem. Once, in a very systematic way, mankind was distracted from and diverted from knowing the ways of God. Who did that? Spinoza. Idolatry was spontaneous. It wasn't like they had a philosophy. He systematized the Avodah Zarah. Right. Before it was a spontaneous Yetzirah, but now he turned it into a philosophy, into a scholarship. Because what now has happened is, right, he has lost in a systematic way, he has diverted us away from knowing God's ways because he blocked out the light of freedom. How did he block out the life of freedom? How does Spinoza block out the light of freedom? Because as soon as you say God is nature, so what happens to freedom?
There is no freedom.
Nature is functions in necessary ways. Right? It's laws. It's not liberation. It's laws. Laws run the universe. And so once there's no freedom, so that's why he then ended up being a determinist. Because if God is nature, and nature is functions from a place of necessity, not from a place of will and choice, so to speak. So now we're done. Shehu makor idealiut. If there is no freedom, can there be idealism? Why not?
There's no growth.
Not only is there no growth, right? If I have to be kind, am I being kind? No, I'm being compulsive, obsessive. So that's not kindness, right? If I have to be honest, and I'm not able to choose to be honest, I'm never even challenged to choose to be honest, am I really being honest? I'm just a robot. I'm just a computer. And so he robbed the world of the very foundation of idealism, which is free choice, right? Because there is no free choice in nature. So once you turn God into nature, then you've turned God into a robot, into a computer, into a machine, and you are now a cog in the machine. And then everything's done. There's no hope, because there's nothing beyond nature. There's no freedom. There's no idealism. All we have is the here and now. right? Which is a nefesh behemi, an animalistic soul. What makes an what are animals? Animals don't have dreams of the future, right? They live now, right? And there are philosophies. Why do the idolaters have animals as their gods? They wanted to be like animals, right? Free like animals, no conscience. Just follow your nature, right? Be like them. They're not stressed out. They're not guilty. They're just living their nature. Yeah.
What do you think about taking, Spinoza class in college or something like Spinoza?
Well, look, if Spinoza's giving the class, I think it's a waste of time. A waste of time.
Think it's dangerous?
Yes, I do think it's dangerous. Because he was so brilliant. So compelling. Right? So what's the point of that? Why subject myself to something that's just going to confuse me? When I already know the results, the side effects. The side effects is he is the founder of theology. He is the founder of secularism, materialism, naturalism, if there's such a word, I guess, right? He robbed the world of freedom, took the world, took the world's hope. And there's no place for happiness here. Yismach leiv mevakshei Hashem. Anochi yismach ba Hashem. Right? I'm in Hashem, but Hashem's beyond me. Right? But Hashem is me. And there's just Hashem, there's just divine immanence, and there's no transcendence, there's nowhere to go, nowhere to grow, nothing to hope for. Done. And so, that is pure secularism. Again, I don't think there's too many pure secularism. Anybody who seeks growth, happiness, and meaning. All right, Shkoyach.
Is that a deeper meaning?